Hey, it's Canzano. I appreciate you making this podcast part of your day. Make sure you subscribe if you want more and leave us some feedback. Away we go.
Initialize sequence.
Welcome to The Baldcast, a production of John Canzano's Bald-Faced Truth. B-F-F-T. From the PAC West Center in downtown Portland, presented by High Caliber Millwrights, here's John Canzano with the bald-faced truth.
I forgave Danelle Rawlings for being late, the comedian, last hour, only because he was funny. It's a very fair world. John Wilner, San Jose Mercury News, right on time as always. You should read Wilner. You should follow Wilner on Twitter. When Wilner talks, you should tune in and listen. Longtime friend of this show, friend of mine, much respect for our next guest, John Wilner, San Jose Mercury News, is with us. Do you like comedy? We had a comedian on last hour. I like comedy.
Yes, sure, absolutely. I'm not into the super, vulgar stuff.
Yeah,
but I do enjoy some good sarcasm.
My wife and I have been watching old Seinfeld episodes. We went back to like the pilot, and we want to watch every episode, like not binge watch it, but we watch like an episode every couple days, and it strikes me like it makes sense that Seinfeld made it because it's just funny. It's good writing. It's good stuff. Like the characters are evolving. I love that show, and I don't know. Are you more of a Seinfeld guy? You're less Tracy Morgan and more Jerry Seinfeld, I'm guessing.
Yeah, I do like Seinfeld. Absolutely, and I watched it. When it was on, especially the tail end. It's great. And the thing about Seinfeld is they were able to talk about things that you really weren't supposed to be talking about on TV, but they did it in such a unique way, right?
Yes. Yes.
I
totally.
Mean, somebody had to win a contest, for instance.
That's right. I'm out! I remember that one.
Yes.
Look, I was on Utah. I was on Salt Lake City Radio this morning, and, I felt like I was the hype man for Utah football because I said on Salt Lake City, ESPN 700, I said that I felt like Utah would probably be the media pick to win the Pac-12 conference. I didn't poll everybody, but I kind of just gathered. I think everybody's going to kind of pick Utah over USC in the South. I want to put you on the spot. You have to pick it today. Is Utah your conference champion prediction?
Oh, for sure. Yeah. I'm not sold on anybody in the North, and I don't know that USC has done quite enough to make up the ground between themselves and Utah. They've certainly... They're a lot better than they were 3 months ago, thanks to the transfer portal 5 months ago. But I just am not sure they've done enough. Right? And Utah not only has got the players, but it's just such a well-run, program, right? Everybody knows the playbook. Everybody is put in positions to thrive with their skill sets. And, that's what you need. I don't know if I think Utah is a playoff team, but I certainly think they're the best team in the conference.
The continuity of Utah, it was interesting. If you go back to Chris Hill's era as the athletic director there, there were a couple years where Kyle Whittingham had some disappointing seasons, and they stuck with him. Can the rest of the Pac-12 learn from that?
I mean, they should, right? They should. He's been there since 2005. And, a lot of their tough seasons were the first 3 or 4 years when they were in the Pac-12, and they need, they had to upgrade their roster, right? I mean, they needed to add speed and depth to compete consistently in the Pac-12. The classic example of that is Mike Krzyzewski. His first few years were not very good, and they stuck with him. Krzyzewski's and, Whittingham's are rare, but there's a lot to be said for continuity. And it's not just with the head coach, but with the coordinators, right? And getting that triangle of head coach and coordinators all on the same page with the systems, how they want to recruit to the system, and certainly I think it's worth, the continuity alone is worth a win or two every season.
I promised my listeners I was going to put you on the spot, not just to pick the conference champion, but also to tell me who are your contenders in the North, who are your contenders in the South. Like, you know, I'll give you the ability to name four teams total that are not Utah. Give me the four top teams that you think can contend with Utah.
I'll pick SC in the North, Oregon, Washington State. I actually would pick Washington State to finish second in the North right now. I like the Cougs, and I'm not quite sold. You know, Washington and Oregon State, they're kind of on the edge. Do I think that in a best-case scenario they could win the North? Probably not. But I do think in a best-case scenario, Washington State could, Oregon State. I really like those four. And if I had to pick a fifth, it might be the Bruins. They have a lot of continuity quarterback. They should be good on offense. They would probably be my other pick. But full transparency, the schedules matter a lot. You know, who you miss in the other division is a big deal. And I have not looked carefully at what the cross-division matchups are, and that would certainly play a role if I were having to put a nickel on somebody.
Dan Lanning, first-year coach, when he initially got hired, he's never been a head coach. I thought, there's going to be growing pains. The more I watch him, the more I like him, Wilner. He's got the team over in his backyard, and he's not in some mega mansion. It's a very modest, you know, normal-looking suburban backyard. It's, you know, there's no pool house, and, you know, there's no view of the ocean. You know, the kids are playing cornhole in the backyard, and I keep thinking maybe his connection with young people is the key here. Like, maybe he's going to connect with guys on a level that other coaches don't. Do you worry at all about Lanning being a first-time head coach, or has that been settled with spring football and them looking like they know what they're doing?
No, I think it should be I don't know if a concern is the right word for Oregon fans, but it's certainly, I don't know that you can dismiss the inexperience until they get through a season, right? And until they get through, you know, November, when the other coaching staffs have had a good look at everything they're doing, and everybody's, you know, countering your tendencies, and you've got to kind of dig deep and be creative, you know, and get guys in the right spots. I think we need to get through a full season for sure to see how he and his staff are going to do in that regard. And I think you can connect great with the young kids, but also, you know, have some growing to do as a coach and as a tactician, right? What I don't know is, to what extent was he really running the Georgia defense, and to what extent was Kirk Smart running the Georgia defense, right? And I'm not sure we're ever going to know, to be honest. But because I don't know that, I certainly am going to be watching to see how they do in terms of the strategy.
The name of it's like this transfer portal stuff is really important, and we talk about it all the time. I've kind of gathered in the last couple weeks of talking about it that the listeners – care about it, but it's not really what they want to hear about when they tune into sports radio and whatnot. Can we give a simple answer to what the solution is? It looks like they're turning to Congress, they're turning to the NCAA, they're trying to rein this thing in a little bit, but in the last week or so, you know, what do you think happens here over the summer with that attempt?
I'm not sure that much is going to happen. I mean, I agree with you. I think the fans care about it to the extent that it affects recruiting and who's on the roster, but it's not going to, you know, necessarily damage the ability for teams to sell tickets and get people to come out to the stadiums, right? At least where things are right now. We'll see. Will Congress eventually try to provide some federal oversight? Maybe that's what it needs, because you've got 50 states and 50 different NIL rules. That's the biggest problem for the NCAA, is unless there's a federal guideline, they're going to be subject to antitrust violations somewhere. And so they're turning to the only place that can help them in that regard. I don't know that it's going to be solved anytime soon. I think that we'll see some kind of market correction. You know, these donors that are putting up $10,000, $50,000, right? They are eventually, they're smart business people, right? They're not going to keep putting up their $50,000 if they don't think it's an investment worthwhile. So maybe 2-3 years, the the market will correct and we're not going to see these exorbitant payments handed out willy-nilly like we are right now.
I also think that we're not that far away from watching a high-profile transfer or recruit who took a big NIL deal from a collective, basically going back on the deal, jumping in the portal, saying, I'm good, I'm going somewhere else, and I'm keeping your money. And I think that is going to affect the market as well. And I think we're not that far away from something like that happening.
Oh, yeah. I mean, it's gonna, there will be, if there's ways for this thing to get further corrupted, I mean, absolutely it'll happen, right? Agents are getting involved with players. And Mississippi passed a law where you can make a donor collective could extend a contract offer, an NIL contract offer, once the recruit, gives a verbal commitment, right? You can verbally commit to a school when you're a freshman in high school,
wow.
Right? So where is it going to end? It's going to end up getting further off the rails before it gets reined in, and it's just a matter of what extremes we end up seeing.
Nobody's talking about Arizona State being any good next year, but they just got a transfer. They got Emory Jones at quarterback. He's committed to going to Arizona State. Is that enough to sort of help Herm Edwards weather the storm, I guess, is the right way to put it?
I think they have a better chance of not stinking with Emory Jones, right? They have a great quarterback room. I mean, I think that there's a chance that it's going to go sour just because of the NCAA situation, right? I mean, if the NCAA rules sometime this summer, X number of major violations, and the writing is on the wall that the program is done and there's going to be postseason bans and all that, it will be hard to stay afloat during the fall, I think. But Emory Jones at least gives them, a third option, probably their best option, a quarterback, and maybe he's the difference between them finishing, fourth as opposed to fifth, right? He gets them that extra win or two. It keeps them from the bottom of the division. But it's hard to imagine them contending with SC and Utah and even UCLA for the entire season, given the state of their roster.
Wilner, you were recently on a big European vacation. Were you in Europe? Where were you?
I was in London, yes.
Okay. Why were you in London?
Your sources are good.
Yeah. Why were you in London and what's happening in London?
I was in London for a family vacation. Basically, yes. My father said, I'm not sure how much longer I'm going to be able to take a vacation with my entire family, so let's go. So 10 of us went to London for, including travel. I think we were gone for 9 days.
Wow.
Over spring break. And I'll tell you what's happening in Europe. Nobody, at least in London, nobody is wearing a mask anywhere. And that's their choice. We went to I don't know if you've been to London, we went to the Churchill Bunkers, the underground area where he ran World War II. And, the ceilings are like 8 feet high and there's small rooms. And we're in there with like 200 euros. And people are wearing masks. I was wearing like two, and I was wearing the N190. I was wearing two of those things. And part of the reason for that is, right, because you have to test negative in order to fly back to the States. So the day before we flew back, we had to take these antigen tests on a Zoom call with this company and they monitor your test, and you can't get your boarding pass to come home unless you test negative. So we had to wear masks everywhere.
Yeah, it has to be a little nerve-wracking as you're taking that test and, you're traveling with kids and you want to get back home. So I'm glad you're home safely and I'm glad you took the trip. Good time? Fun was had by all?
Yeah, it was a great time. And the huge, biggest upset of all is there was no, Category 5 news in the Pac-12 for those, 8 or 9 days. And so I was able to actually, stay off the grid. The last time I tried that was last summer. And on day 4 of my vacation attempt, Texas and Oklahoma went to the SEC. So vacation kind of ended then. But fortunately, things were fairly quiet.
Wilner, you're the best. Thanks for making time for us as always.
Always, my friend. Thank you.
John Wilner, San Jose Mercury News. Great stuff with him. I want you to leave it here. You got the bald-faced truth statewide.
You've got the home of the truth. Back to the Bald-Faced Truth with John Canzano on 750 The Game.
Mother's Day this weekend. The mother in our household over here, Anna, has popped into the studio. And a mother is in trouble in Cincinnati, Ohio, Anna. YouTuber, Cammie Crawford, she's a YouTube influencer, and her husband, Ben, are facing some backlash because they ran a marathon. They ran this Flying Pig Marathon in Cincinnati, Ohio, 26.2 miles, in case you don't know what a marathon is. They ran the marathon with their six children, including their youngest, their six-year-old Rainier, is the kid's name. Even though the race has a posted age minimum of 18, the organizers made an exception for them. Rainier took 8 hours and 35 minutes, but he was crying and struggling physically towards the end of the race. As an incentive to keep him moving, mom and dad told Rainier that they would give him two cans of Pringles if he could finish. A lot of people upset about these parents. I don't like it. I don't like it either, Anna. I think they're bad parents. I think that's a bad mom.
Oh, golly.
I'm judging.
You're going right for that, are you?
Yeah. Exploiting their kid. Kid doesn't want to run a marathon. He's crying.
Well, they're claiming that he was begging to run it with his older brothers and sisters. He wanted to do it with the family, but that by mile 20... the son was struggling physically and wanted to take a break and sit every 3 minutes.
He should.
The race organizers are apologizing. They're saying they assume responsibility for the decision and accept that this was not the best course of action.
Yeah, it's wrong. It's they wanted some YouTube page views or, you know, video views, and so they put their six-year-old out there and tortured him over 26 miles, and they said, okay, this is good for us. It's good for the family. Look, no, I hardly think anybody should be running 26.2 miles, let alone a six-year-old. Okay?
I personally can't imagine any six-year-old that could even attempt that. I do think it's interesting that Kara Goucher is weighing in on it.
What'd she say?
So, two-time Olympic distance runner Kara Goucher saying she's not questioning motivation or saying it's bad parenting.
It's bad parenting.
But as an Olympic athlete, I promise you this is not good for the child. She's adding that a six-year-old child who is struggling physically does not realize they have the right to stop and should.
Yeah, I agree with that. I'll real quick, my marathon story, you know it. I was in marathon Athens.
Let's hear your marathon.
And let me just tell you about the marathon I ran.
Yeah.
I was over at the track the night before, okay? And I was working.
In Athens.
I was interviewing the track and field runners that were coming off the course. You're in this mixed zone area. And Dan Brown, United States Olympian in the marathon, was hanging out, okay? Uh-huh. He was just hanging out.
Okay.
So I started talking to him. And I said, I want to go to marathon tomorrow, and I want to run the marathon course. And Dan said, first question he asked was, have you ever run a marathon before? And I said, never. And I said, I just want to finish it. I'm not even worried. Like this kid, you know, if somebody gave me two cans of Pringles, I would do it. And so Dan says, okay, I got some advice for you. And I said, look, I just want to finish it. And my thing was, I said, I could take 4 or 5 hours. I don't need to run this in like 2 hours, 38 minutes, okay? Mm-hmm. Like, I don't need to do that.
Right.
But I said, I just want to start it and finish it. And he said, all right, my biggest piece of advice is, he said, you haven't been training for this. I said, nope. He says, you've never done a marathon before. And I said, nope. He says, what's the farthest you've ever run? Is it farthest or furthest?
Furthest.
Okay.
Because farther is like a physical distance thing. Well,
yeah, it's farthest.
It's farthest.
Farthest, because
yeah,
you just said it.
Yeah, yeah.
Boy, you're usually the voice of reason on this stuff. You just melted down right there.
Sorry, it's Friday. It's Friday, okay? Friday.
Thank
right?
goodness you
it's
got,
Friday, right?
It's Thursday, Anna.
No, it's not.
It's only Thursday.
No.
No, I'm just kidding.
Oh,
it's Friday.
It's Friday.
Okay, so look, so Dan says, you know, haven't run it. He says, what's the farthest you've ever run? And I said, I did a 10K when I was a kid. But I wasn't six. I was like 12.
Yeah.
And he was like, okay. He says, first thing is, it's hot out there. He said, it's going to be like 96 degrees.
This is Summer Olympics in Athens,
Greece. He said, do not be out there middle of the day. Uh-huh. You want to get out there when it's dark in the morning and it's cool.
Okay.
He said, that will help you immensely. He said, you need to hydrate tonight. You need to sleep and hydrate. Get a good night's sleep, but get out there at like 5:30 in the morning.
Wow. Okay. So good advice. Good advice.
And then he said, don't start too fast because the course from Marathon to Athens, it's the actual course of the original marathon. He said it's got a grade on it. It's uphill for about the first 10 miles.
Wow.
And you don't really realize it. It's just a slight uphill. He says it's not the easiest course. Like the easiest course would be fully downhill,
yeah,
right? Come
right.
on. Can we get a marathon that's like downhill? And so he says, you know, get out there, whatever, whatever. Let me know how it goes. Okay. When I saw him next, days later.
He didn't try to talk you out of it?
And he kind of was when he was saying, you've never done this before.
Yeah.
But days later when I saw him next, he said, how did it go? And I said, okay. I got out there at 11 a.m.
He slept in.
It was like 92 degrees when I started running.
And so you followed his advice to a T.
And I took off sprinting at the beginning.
Right.
No, I ran. I had a good mindset. Like, I was just jogging. Okay?
Yeah.
And I was like, don't overdo it. Just jog. You have all day to do this. I got like 6 miles and I started to go like, I think I could do this. Like, I could run marathons.
Uh-huh.
Like, I could, this could be my thing.
6 miles in, this like, was your thought.
Like, maybe I was born to do this. This would be like somebody, if you didn't know, like you'd never played ping pong. And you start playing ping pong one day and you're like, oh my gosh, this is effortless. And you're like, I was born to be a ping pong player and I never knew it.
Uh-huh.
Like, you never know.
Yeah.
Right? Table
what
tennis?
What happened at mile 7?
It's more like mile 6.5. Mile 6.5, I started to go like, ooh, it's hot out here. And then I started to go like, I started doing the math in my head.
Yeah.
And I was like, okay, I'm like 25% of the way through this course. Well, I made about 8 miles, 9 miles before mentally I started to hit the wall.
What kind of hydration did you have?
I had one bottle of water.
Oh, cool.
Yeah.
And you were like carrying that?
It's a two-lane road, too, and there's almost nobody out there, but every once in a while a car would come by and they
yeah.
kind of slow down and look at you like you're an idiot.
Uh-huh.
And then I just started thinking, like, you know, about the Greek myth, like Pippides and the whole thing. Like, you know, they won the war and he had to run to Athens and tell them and then he died.
Mm.
And I was like, I'm not going to do that.
Mm.
So then I started walking.
Yeah.
Like this kid.
Yeah.
And then I started hitchhiking. And I started thinking, it'd be so much better if I had a horse or something. So then I started getting picked up by people, and then I would ask them, and, you know, their broken English, my limited Greek, which is zero, and I would start asking them, you know what I'm doing? Yeah, you know, some of them did, some of them didn't. I eventually got back to Athens, but it was about 4 car rides back.
So you made 9 miles and then began.
I made about, I'm going to say I made eight
okay.
and a half.
Okay.
And then I started hitchhiking. But I had them, the last person who gave me a ride dropped me off like 2 blocks from the Olympic Stadium. And because I wanted to run into the Olympic Stadium at the end.
Yeah.
Because the runners are going to do that. They run into the Olympic Stadium and it's
right.
magnificent.
Oh, yes.
Because they've been out on the open roads and all of a sudden they're in the stadium and it's filled with people.
Yeah.
So I was jogging towards the Olympic Stadium, apparently looking like hell.
Yeah.
And the security guards were standing there and they saw me coming and they all kind of stood up. They were sitting. And they stood up and watched me arrive. And as I arrived, I slowed down to a walk. And they said, what are you doing? And I said, I started in marathon and I couldn't finish my sentence because I was going to say, I started in marathon, I ran, I got picked up, I got dropped off here, I'm running into the stadium. All I said is, I started in marathon and they started buzzing to each other in Greek.
Uh-huh.
Yeah. And then they...
That's how Greek sounds?
Yeah, they let me in.
Uh-huh.
Because they were like, look at this guy. He just ran a marathon. And I ran
omitted
into
from the story where the 4 car rides you took along.
They
the way.
Let me run into the stadium
uh-huh.
just like the Olympic champion would.
Wow.
And it was really cool. Stadium was all lit up, whatever. I ran in. And but I weighed myself that night.
Yeah.
Because I weighed in the morning. I lost 11 pounds. You want a diet, folks? My pants didn't fit the same. I lost all, it was all water, no doubt. I lost 11 pounds from the morning to the evening. And it was humbling, the experience. So this kid, back to the kid.
Right.
I think bad parenting, child stopping every 3 minutes after 20 miles, crying, emotionally distressed, parents bring him to the finish line and get Pringles. Anybody else got a problem with this, Judah? You got a problem with this, Judah?
That sounds pretty sketch-a-sketch to me. I don't like it.
The dad saying that they asked him numerous times during the race if he wanted to stop, and he was very clear that his preference was to continue.
He wanted his Pringles.
They didn't see any signs of heat exhaustion or dehydration and honored his request to keep going.
Yeah. It's
Doritos, maybe, but not Pringles.
I don't get it, you know? You know, and I did a stupid thing once upon a time. That, I don't know why this popped into my head, but, you know, you're more of a skier than I am.
Mm-hmm.
I've only been skiing one time in my life before I met you.
Yeah, it's not saying much for me. But
and
yeah.
You wanted to go skiing.
Yeah.
And so I kind of faked that I knew what I was doing up there a little bit.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, you totally did.
I didn't totally. I just kind of said I'm more comfortable than I really was. And I went tumbling down the hill numerous times. But I did that of my free will.
Yes.
You know, this kid, he doesn't know what's right for him. He's 6 years old.
Yeah.
We have a six-year-old. Would you want little Soji to run a marathon next week?
No.
No.
Well, it's interesting because the family dynamic is interesting. So their oldest kid is 20. They've got other kids that are under 18. And so all of them ran in the full marathon last Sunday with the dad and the mom. And the five older children waited for more than an hour at mile 25 for that youngest brother to catch up so that they could cross the finish line together.
He fell down. Do you know that? He fell at one point.
Yeah, there were tears.
He couldn't.
There was a fall.
He couldn't run. His parents, they ought to be ashamed of themselves. You know what? No Mother's Day presents for that lady. Happy Mother's Day except for that one. No, that's bad. That's selfish. They're exploiting their kid, Anna.
Yeah, you think so?
How can you not see that?
I'm reluctant to sit here and criticize somebody else's parenting choices.
This isn't like a family letting their kid on the iPad at the Red Robin restaurant. This is like they took their kids out on the track because why? Because they have a YouTube reality TV show. And they need the whole family to run the thing. And so the six-year-old, he didn't get a vote.
They do have this brand, right, as a family where they say their intention is to live life outside the box. They claim to be the largest family to have ever hiked the entire Appalachian Trail. Dad wrote a book, you know. So, there's a lot going on.
Kids
there.
Are resilient. Is that what they're saying? Kids are resilient. They fall down. They get up. They'll be fine. Much more ahead, a verdict in the Doug Brenner University of Oregon NCAA trial, and more. We'll talk about it all. Leave it here.
We interrupt this broadcast with a special announcement from the Bald-Faced
Truth. Hey, sorry to interrupt the podcast, but if you want to listen to more of the Bald-Faced Truth Radio Show, including more of this segment that you're listening to, make sure you subscribe on SoundCloud and iTunes to the Bald-Faced Truth Radio Show. Thanks for listening.